Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up. It's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's March 30th, 2012. You're listening to the best poker cast money can buy. I'm Chris Cosenza.
Yeah, I'm Scott Long.
I think anyone would pay for this show.
Maybe your mom. Maybe
yeah,
my mom.
Yeah, my
your mom.
Your mom
would probably would.
My mom would, especially after this show, because we're going to be talking about my mom a little bit. So she might pony up some cash for that. But no, we're not in danger. We're not going to be charging anybody for this fine entertainment.
But maybe we could start an internet rumor like that. You know how the everybody's like, oh my God, the post office is going to start charging for emails. People got all upset, and then you know, you look at people like, seriously? You're actually going to believe that rumor? But hey, we know people will believe that rumor. So yeah, I'm sure on 2 plus 2 tomorrow, they're like, Ante Up charging for the poker cast. Those greedy bastards.
No, that's not to say if we come out with an app, we might not charge for an app. You know, hey, you want to support the Ante Up Nation somehow? You like this? But you know, that's down the road, you know. We still haven't found anybody to actually do it for us anyway, so. So you're on the road, dude, but you're kind of like on vacation. Don't you love it when you're on vacation, but you're not really on vacation?
Yeah. You know, you're never really on vacation.
No.
When you're in your own business.
No, never really, you know, on
that wasn't in the manual. That wasn't the brochure that we got, you know.
Should have put it in that contract that we signed.
Yeah, we went to the How to Start Your Own Poker Magazine class. They conveniently left that out.
Yeah. You're in.
I got off the cruise and had 2 days to do some laundry and flew up here. I'm in our nation's capital now, Chris.
Very nice.
You know, there's not a lot of poker up here, at least that I could see. I mean, it's all done in the back halls of the Capitol building because you know it's fine for them to play poker.
Yeah.
But, you know, Darwin forbid the rest of us be able to play poker where and when we want to play, but. But no, having a good time up here with the old niece and nephew, taking them out, the little monuments and memorials and things like that. And then Sunday I'm headed up to Philadelphia for a night with the wife, putting her on the plane the next day, and bachelor weekend in Atlantic City.
Very nice.
I should say weekend. Week. Bachelor weekday.
Bachelor
weekend. Because you know, I'm 40. I can't do a bachelor weekend anymore. I'm too old.
No, you're too old.
But yeah, I'll be heading down to Atlantic City on Monday, and as we've been teasing you, we will be doing a meetup Monday night, which is April 2nd, correct?
I don't know. You tell me. You're doing a damn meetup. What the hell am I? Calendar man? I'm not your freaking assistant.
This coming Monday, 7 o'clock, what we're going to do is, you know, because here's the problem with these meetups is we usually try to do a tournament, which people like, right? But then you're kind of locked into your seat. You know, you can't get to know everyone.
Right.
And move around. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to meet at, if you're interested, come down to Atlantic City. A bunch of people have already told me that they are. We're going to meet at 7 o'clock at the House of Blues restaurant at the Showboat on the boardwalk. And we'll all enjoy a meal together. And then from there, we'll just roam the boardwalk like crazy nomads, playing cards wherever we want to go. Definitely want to check out the Revel, which is opening that day, which I think is going to be very interested to see what that looks like, but we'll just roam around and play cards wherever they'll have us. So hopefully if you're in the area, meet us for dinner. If not, if you can't make it to dinner, you know, we'll be I'll be tweeting where we are, so make sure you follow us at Ante Up Magazine on the Twitter,
as they say.
And and you'll know where we are. And if you're planning on making joining us for dinner, go ahead and tweet us ahead of time or email us at podcast@anteupmagazine.com so I know how many people to expect. Because, you know, I'll show up by myself, right? I'll be like, 12. They're like, sure. Whatever, sir.
I can just see you trying to hold it down a table for 12 with one person sitting there.
Well, I'll order 12 beers because, you know, those will not go to waste. But no, let us know ahead of time whether you're headed down there, and if you get in late, just follow us on the Twitter, and we'll catch up with you sometime somewhere on the boardwalk.
Before we move on, the big question, and maybe we could set the over-under on this, is how many times have you been mugged in D.C.?
I have never been mugged in D.C.
Man, anybody?
Are you believing these urban rumors that our nation's capital is not safe?
Well, I saw it on 2 Plus 2 that they said that D.C. is the most violent city in all of America. So I just wanted to know if everything's okay. You guys are safe. Are you packing heat? How are you getting along? I mean, it's not easy to live there.
First of all, when you have the physical specimen that I carry around on a daily basis, it's better than a 357 Magnum. People turn the corner and they look at me like, you know what? I'm going to pick another target.
Yeah, that gut you got, man, that could scare off anybody. I know when you go into the buffet, they start bringing in tables into the kitchen because they don't want you to eat half the food. I've seen that happen. Hide that table!
But what's interesting, they have a great subway system here, obviously, the Metro, because I used to live here for a semester in college and, uh-huh. and have a good time. They obviously, like all good public transportation, they sell ads, right? And I got off the Metro yesterday, saw a big ad for Hollywood Charlestown, poker, slots. Hmm. First time I've ever seen anything like that up here, because obviously they haven't had anything near here,
yeah,
casino-wise until the last couple of years. So it's slowly creeping towards Capitol Hill. Slowly.
That's cool. It's inevitable. Kind of like death and taxes.
I tried to get a White House tour so I could sit down with Barack and go, "Hey, Barack, buddy.
Yeah.
What are we going to do on this poker thing? Let's just bang something out here that we can do the Mideast Peace next week."
You know, he's our president. We should be able to talk to him.
He is. And unfortunately, my congressman does not share my political beliefs. And I'm sure that's why he denied my request for a White House tour.
Because that is just not good.
He probably thought I was going to get to Barack and do that. So I was one of those plebes outside the gate of the White House looking in instead of actually on the inside, having a shark sandwich.
All right. Well, best of luck to you, and give everyone my love in Atlantic City.
Everybody my love? Your love? Because there's some people there that I don't think you want me sharing love with.
Well, you can share the love. Just don't give it to me.
Oh, man. All right. Well, I hope to see everybody in the Atlantic City area on Monday night, and then we'll have some fun. But in the meantime, our forum... Interesting thing was posted about a month ago. It just taking us a while to get it on the show here. But, we're always about rankings. And I know you've got your own little personal vendetta about rankings.
Not really, but okay.
Vendetta is just a stronger word. I like
it. Yeah, yeah.
Makes it sound like you're a bandit. Because we went to the crime museum yesterday, so. somebody posted on there that, he sees all these rankings everywhere. Most of them all are... money, amount of money won, or there's some kind of points-based thing. But the poster was like, what makes sense to me is not how much money you won or how many points you won, but what's your ROI? What's your return on investment? I don't necessarily think somebody should be a player of the year if they spend $7 million to win $3 million.
Hmm.
Or somebody else wins $2 million and only spent $1,500.
Wow.
And I thought that was an interesting question. Obviously, there's severe flaws in it, which I'll get to after I let you go on your vendetta range. But what do you think about it? Is that a better way of ranking people, return on investment rather than money won?
Well, here's the deal. I absolutely love this idea, and here's why. Because I would like Sam Minotaur to submit my Sarasota One-Eyed Jacks records to this system, because I would be the number one player in all of the universe. Because I have cashed in more tournaments there than any human being on the planet per ratio. So, yeah, what the hell? Now, that's a funny way of me saying, yeah, I don't think this will work. Really, I mean, you're going to reward... I guess you'd have to have a minimum amount of tournaments to do this then. You have to set a minimum and...
Well, that's true. They do it that amazing.
Right. Yeah, so I guess you'd have to do that. And I love the idea of return on investment, meaning, okay, this... But But if it's a percentage thing, you know, then you're now you have to set a minimum price buy-in too for that because, you know, are you hurting the guy who happens to win $350 buy-in events, but because he can't afford a $1,000 event, or you know, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I like the idea. I think it's cool because you are. He also gets back kind of to the column that our friend Jay Houston writes for us. This month he wrote about hourly rate and saying how that's really the only thing you need to concern yourself with. What's your hourly rate, and are you playing too many tournaments outside of your bankroll kind of thing, and or how much money are you actually making for the time you're investing? So it's always a great benchmark to go by. I really, really like that idea. I just think that it's it would reward too many luck boxes, I think, for performance for in a handful of tournaments rather than longevity. Or, you know, I feel like if somebody qualifies for the minimum amount and they only play the minimum amount, but you got another guy who's or a woman who's playing, you know, a ton of events and, you know, they cash in enough. You know, I mean, I don't think you should hurt somebody because they entered more events. ROI is a cool thing. And it's a great thing for your IRS or whatever, but for a ranking of a player, you know, I don't know. I think there's too many loopholes in that.
Well, this is what I'll say. I mean, I think it's probably the best way to rank players. I'm not going to argue with that. Unfortunately, it's a dream scenario.
Yeah.
You know, because when you wake up and you enter the real world with this idea, you're going to find out how it can't happen. And here's why. You know, because I'm the official scorekeeper for our Ante Up Player of the Year. Right?
Yep.
Now, and you're our official gopher of results. You know,
right.
You're always in contact with the poker room managers to try to get results. I don't think anybody understands how hard your job is.
Right.
On the outside, you're like, oh, why wouldn't a poker room want to send the poker magazine all the results? Complete with first and last name and hometown and money won and all that. I can't answer that. So I totally agree.
Yep.
Unfortunately, in the real world, sometimes it's like pulling teeth to even get a winner out of a tournament from a poker room. So here's and that's just people that cashed, which they have some kind of record of. You know, they have some kind of record in their system of paying out money to this person, right?
Right.
For a return on an investment, you're going to have records of everybody that entered that tournament.
Yep.
So right there, it's going to be pretty impossible. Actually, I wouldn't say pretty. It's impossible.
Plus, a lot of these tournaments don't use like IDs and stuff to register you.
Yeah, and that was going to be the next thing I was going to say. I mean, even if they did, I mean, most of the bigger rooms now are requiring you have a Players Club card to play, so they have some kind of unique name or number. But that number doesn't transcend to other rooms. You know, if you go to, we'll use Atlantic City for an example here. If you go play in a tournament at the Borgata, and then you go just down the street and play a tournament here as Atlantic City, you're not the same person.
That's right.
In terms of a tracking of some sort of system. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen a Dan Smith from Brooklyn and a Daniel Smith from Manhattan.
Yeah.
Or New York, I should say.
Yeah.
You know, so is that the same person? I don't know. You got to kind of guess. And so to that point, that's why I think the folks at Hendon Mob and these other websites that do such a phenomenal job of tracking a lot more than we do, I give them mad props because it's really difficult to do. And you know, as hard as they work, there are mistakes in there.
Oh, sure. I mean, how many times do you look up and the same player is listed because one was Daniel and one was Dan and the system's automated?
Right.
And they're not combining the two because they're not certain or they don't know about it. It's just, it's crazy. And then just, I'm glad you brought up that other point. I'll give you an idea. This morning I received results from someone for their property. And the results came in with first name, last initial only. And actually, too, the person who sent to me said, the property has approved releasing these. And I'm like, what is it they're approving? That these unnamed people won an event that you already publicly said you had? I mean, and then, like, on top of that, we only got winner names, but they're only first name, last initial, and we didn't get, like, what the event was. It just says, event one, winner, Joe T. I mean, and then, you know, what am I supposed to do with that? I mean, how many times has anyone opened a magazine in any genre of life and read a story about somebody and said, hey, John D. won this event? Or, you know, Samantha S. loves to decorate her home with... No! If you're reading house, you know, Good Housekeeping or whatever, and you're doing a story about somebody's home, we want to know who the person is that you're talking about. You know, it's like, you know, for reasons that she doesn't want the IRS to know that she bought this expensive sofa with the money that she made with tips from McDonald's. Or, you know, or whatever. You know, obviously McDonald's doesn't have a waiter. But it's just crazy to me that people will think that they've done us a favor by sending us names and last initials. Yeah. So this is the stuff that we face every single day. Imagine what an ROI system would face.
Yeah.
So it's ideally it's the perfect way to do it if you can come up with the perfect system for it. But then it's getting everybody on board, including the players themselves, giving out. How many times have we seen Chad Brown listed as Las Vegas?
Yeah.
As what's the other?
Margate, Florida.
Yeah, Margate, Florida, and then like even like one other one was like, I don't know, somewhere else. But he had like three Florida addresses and two Vegas ones. And I'm like, we all know who it is, what does he have? Six licenses?
Yeah.
You know, or are they using old records and they don't update their records? So it's a great idea. It's just not feasible. It really isn't.
The closest we can get to it is within a family of properties. You know, like a Caesars Entertainment, where you always use your Total Rewards card.
Yeah.
You know, obviously they can do an internal one for all their tournaments, which would be interesting, but it's not complete, obviously.
Right.
You know, until we get to a point in society where people are fine turning over their social security number to a poker room, and I don't think that's ever going to happen. You know, unless there's some kind of unique ID that's used by everyone. It's really a non-starter issue, but it's a great idea. It's a great idea.
Yeah, it's a cool idea, just not really something that can happen. Well, while you were gone, our hotline rang. Very exciting stuff. 813-448-1120. You call that. We use it. We'll give you something. Doug from Minneapolis went on a little bit of a road trip and found something very interesting. Here's what he has to say.
Good morning, Chris and Scott. This is Doug from Minneapolis. Hey, I was in Delaware this weekend for a family function. And we were at Rehoboth Beach, and they actually have a card room that the rate goes to charity, a different charity every night of the week. It is cool. You know, it's basically 1-2 no limit is their primary game. They have blackjack tables, but mostly they're playing, you know, 1-2 no limit for hold'em. Max buy-in is about 150, but the rake is pretty standard, and but it goes to the charity of the night. It's kind of cool. So the next time you're in Delaware, run by the beach on the way to Harrington Raceway for their card room, and check it out. The place is called Poker at the Beach. It's online. Well, you can find it online. Let's put it that way. They're not online. But that's it. Have a great day. I'll talk to you guys later. Bye.
I like that. And I think before they closed them up, not sure, but I thought the Portsmouth ones in Virginia were something like that, where the charity...
Yeah, actually, they have these on a lot of places.
Yeah.
Actually, in Illinois, obviously, there's a big cottage industry of charity events, and they all work more or less the same way. You know, a lot of places, it sounds like, and this is the scenario, too, where you've got a company that actually runs the events, and is kind of paid to run the events, and then... They siphon the proper amount of money off to the charity du jour,
yeah,
as it is,
yeah.
And you know, so it's good. I'm glad to see that that poker in lots of places, including Delaware, is benefiting good causes. I do know there's obviously some people out there that obviously think this is kind of a way around the law, which it is, and it would just be better if they just legalize poker and, you know, use cameras and
yeah.
Professional staff, and then just trusted the trickle-down theory. Poker players donating to charity based on what they won. But in the absence of that, you know, it's one more proof that there's demand out there to play poker.
And,
Bankers should look into that. You
know? Michigan has a ton of charity rooms, too.
Right, right.
So they're everywhere, really. And it's interesting the way they do it differently from place to place. But I do like that. I like the way that the rake this week is going, you know, today is going to, you know, St. Jude's or something. That's kind of cool.
Oh, and the scenarios where people use this is great for the charity because, I mean, they really don't have to do a lot to earn the money. I mean, you think about, you know, how many times you're hit up to buy cookies or wrapping paper or cookie dough or, yeah, you know, all this other crap that people go door to door to sell, and the company gets 97% of it, you know. The poor little kids out there sweating all day. You know, it's a much better fundraiser for these folks to know that, you know, they just need to put their name on it and maybe, you know, provide a staffer or two or something, and you know, people are going to play cards. Because let's be honest, no one's showing up at these charity rooms because they're passionate about Foundation for Blindness. You know,
no.
And that sounds cruel, but that's true. I mean, they're coming there to play poker, and they know the charity is part of the rake at that point. But that money goes to help Foundation for Blindness nonetheless, and that's good for the charity. So,
all good points.
All right, Doug. Well, we appreciate you calling in. You're still within our new swag policy of within a year, so no new swag for you. But everybody else, call the hotline, like Chris said, at 813-448-1120, and we'll send you something wonderful like a deck of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Anti-Up. You can pick up your own decks in the Anti-Up store at antiupstore.com.
Rich from Joliet wrote in on our mailbag this week, and he made a trip, too. All our guys are going all over the place.
Everybody's traveling.
Gotta love the Anti-Up Nation for getting out. He says it was his first time playing California. Bought in for $100 to play some 2-4 limit hold'em, which I didn't even see that out there when I was out there. Did you see that?
I wasn't looking for it.
I saw 3-6. I played 3-6 and got my head handed to me. So it was brutal. I had $50 in light blue $1 chips and $50 in light green $2 chips. After I played my first hand, the player two seats to my right complained that he couldn't tell the chips apart very well, and I should just get the blue $1 chips like everyone else. I ignored him and played on. A few hands later, he complained again, saying that it was confusing trying to tell if I was raising or just calling because the chips looked so similar. I said that if it confused him and put him off his game, then that was good for me. A couple of players snickered, and the whiner sat back with a scowl. After about another half hour, I could tell that it was actually confusing for some of the other players at the table as well. Several times, someone had to confirm my play, not sure if I was raising or calling. I decided to go ahead and color down to the blue $1 chips. The rest of the session was uneventful. So, was that the right thing to do for the sake of keeping the game moving? And did that guy end up helping the rest of the table by getting on my case? Or was he out of line for telling me how to handle my stack?
Awesome. Lots of good questions here. All right, so I'll start. First of all, I don't know whether he requested $1 and $2 chips.
Mm-hmm.
If they were just handed to you, then that's a different story. If you actually ask for them, that changes a little bit. Generally, when you go to a game, they ask you, or when you buy in, they ask you what game you're playing, or obviously they know because your name just gets called, and they give you the proper denomination of chips. You know, they're going to give you a stack of red for a no limit game, and they're going to give you a rack of white for a limit game.
Right,
so
right.
I'd be curious about that. But, you know, I thought is that when he said for the sake of keeping the game moving, because I understand, I know players are, you know, hey, don't be telling me what color chips I need to be betting with.
Right.
You know, if I want to go into a McDonald's and pay with 100 pennies off the dollar menu, I'm going to pay with 100 pennies, right? If I want to play with the $2 green chips, I'm going to play with the $2 green chips. But it's a very good point. If you're a good player in that game, you want as many hands as possible to make more money. So even though it's throwing other people off their game by not knowing what's going on, you are slowing the game down and potentially costing yourself money if you are a good player, which I am sure Rich is, right? So for that fact alone, I think I would switch to the blue $1 chips.
I agree, and to me, it does help the game along, kind of like chopping. You know, you want to chop, let's move the game along. Seven other people don't want to sit there and watch two guys in a limit poker game battle it out for $3.
Yep.
So why not just, you know, chop it up and move the game along? Same thing here. If you feel like you're slowing the game down because you have these chips, why would you want to create 9 enemies or 8 enemies? Why would you want to slow the game down? You're paying to play in that game. You want to play as many hands as possible. You know, time is finite when it comes to poker. So, you know, get as many hands in as possible. I agree. I think that if they gave them to you, I would, you know, kind of say something to the dealer, say, hey, you should tell your cashier to stop giving these out if it's causing a problem. But if you asked for them, then really coloring them down to fit into the game the way the game is going would be ideal. I mean, nobody wants to keep breaking hundreds if you're playing in a 2040.
Right.
Yeah. You know, or whatever. So why break twos or whatever you call them? And I think so. I don't think he was right for being a jerk to you about it.
Yeah, I guess that was the next question. Was he out of line?
Yeah.
And I don't think he's out of line to mention it to you. It's how he mentions to you. And we talk about this on the show all the time. Yep. There's a right way to ask a question, and there's a wrong way to ask a question. And, you know, in this case, I would just kind of, you know, hey, by the way, you know, your chips are kind of, in fact, this is how I would do it, because it's going to get to my next point, too. I would say, I don't know why this casino made these chips the same color.
Yeah.
But it's confusing to people. You might just want to... it's going to speed the game up. We're going to get more hands in if you color down. See, you're telling them in a way that makes sense to them rather than, hey,
yep,
you idiot.
Yep.
Which it sounds like this guy.
plus, it makes your stack bigger.
Absolutely. There you go. Yeah.
You've just now made your stack one third bigger.
Yeah, and you can tell him he's betting factors of nine when an online poker comes back, too. That's the same effect. But yeah, I wonder what you think too. I mean, this is to me the ultimate problem here is that we have a casino that went out and ordered chips and didn't take the extra 5 minutes to think about the colors being similar for chips that are going to be in the same game. Yeah. Now, you know, there's only so many colors in the palette that are suitable for a poker chip. So I know that's kind of tough, but you know, if you're a casino that needs a dollar chip and a $2 chip, I think you need to make those fairly stark in color. And then if you have to do the same swatch, make it a dollar chip and a $100. Something that's not going to show up in the same game.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And Annie Up Nation, here's a little treat for you. Scott and I are going to actually discuss business on the show, which never happens. But on our cruise, a lot of people suggested that we make sure that the centers of our chips are not the same color, because the sides of them doesn't make a difference. If the majority of the chip is white and then the sides are a different color, it's not enough when you're looking at the pot from the top for them to know. So when we order our next set for chips, our dollars are white, so we're going to make sure that our fives are all red and not just red on the outside.
Yeah,
so
right,
same kind of thing. You know, we hear what they say and we listen, and we're going to make the changes when we need to. So that's the same deal. Why make a light blue and a light green chip when you know the chips are going to intermingle in the game? So almost all of our chips intermingle, you know, because the majority of all of our chips are ones and fives in the cash game. So, So I think that it's a smart thing to sit there and think about. You know, hey, it should be more than just the faces that are the same. You need to have them different as well. So, good point.
Yeah. All right, Rich, we appreciate you sending this in. I think you're entitled for new swag. So we're going to send you a grinder bracelet from Pro Poker Gear, which sells much more than terrific bracelets for home games or leagues, including hats, T-shirts, and gifts, all in the Annie Up Store at annieupstore.com. And send your future mailbags and hands of the week to podcast at annieupmagazine.com, and you too might win something great.
Man, it's a full show. We even got a call to floor today. Man, you got to love the listeners. this comes from Mark Wittig, one of our regulars. He said, we were playing 7-card stud with 7 players in a fun micro-cash home game. Everyone is in the hand after Fifth Street when the dealer notices that he only has 2 cards left, not 3. Which I don't even know how 3 is like the, hey, it should be 3. It should be a lot more than that, I think. But anyway, he says, what would a card room do, and what would happen if the dealer had 4 cards? Well, I'm hoping he has even more than that, to be honest with you. But we'll see what Jody has to say.
I'm sure he's talking about his up cards, right?
I hope.
All right, well, here's what Jody says. I would rule a missed deal since there would should still be 15 cards in the deck, then check everyone's sleeve.
Oh, man.
And then he goes on, this is not not what Mark was talking about, but it's added information for our listeners out there. He said there are 2 different procedures normally used when the deck runs short in 7-card stud. The easiest and best method is to use a community card. He doesn't mention this, but call it a spinner.
Right.
It's simple and easy to understand. So essentially, you just put one last card out and everybody shares it rather than deal everyone else. But he said the deck actually got down to 2 cards because of home rules that allow buying or ditching cards. I would shuffle the burns in with the remaining 2 cards in the deck and then use the community card. If there were 4 cards, I would simply use a community card without shuffling the burns in.
Now, the problem, I would hate to have to face is there being a missed deal after five streets of cards.
Yeah.
And then betting. You got that pot together. How do you recreate that? How much money did you put in? How much money did I put in? You know, oh my God. I mean, you could do it, but it, oh, what a pain. But
yeah, it wouldn't be easier just to kill the dealer's hand. I'm half joking, but half serious too, right?
Yeah.
I mean, again, it's your job to pay attention to your cards and make sure you have the proper amount, right?
Yep.
It seems funny to me to declare a missed deal at this point and affect other people who were properly managing their cards. Now, I say that because this has happened in every home game since Wild Bill Hickok was having his home game. You know, when you're self-dealing, it's tough to pay attention and mistakes happen. But, you know, that's one of the perils of a home game where you're self-dealing.
I would like to know how they only had that many cards left, though.
Yeah.
I would like to know that. Pretty interesting. All right, well, you get something from the swag shelf, so that's cool.
Absolutely, Mark. We're going to send you a t-shirt from PMS Pokerware, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the AnnieUp store at AnnieUpStore.com. And remember to send your call to the floor to the podcast at AnnieUpMagazine.com.
We know Scott's meeting up with people this week in AC, but very quickly, another meetup with him in Minneapolis on May 27th, Chicago on May 29th, and of course, Scott and I will be in Vegas the week of June 25th. We'll get you more details as it gets closer. But just mark your calendars now. And, of course, our cruises, which we just mentioned a little while ago, still have two left for 2012. Schedules at AnnieUpMagazine.com/cruise. Our next one is August 27th out of Port Canaveral. There are some giveaways going on, especially one at Suncoast in Las Vegas. And then November 10th out of Baltimore. So people are getting pretty psyched about that one, too. So we're already selling a bunch of cabins, so hurry up and get your spot if you want to come join us. Okay, Scott. I know that you made a lot of news yourself up there, but some other stuff's going on while you're gone, so let's check in with our AnnieUp news desk.
The Alderney Gaming Control Commission, the commission that had regulatory power over Full Tilt when that site collapsed, has released an independent external review of the situation. The report says the commission was, quote, appropriate, timely, and fair in how it responded to the situation. But the person who did the report also said the commission has, quote, lessons to learn from it.
What are we to make of that?
Wow. I don't know. So essentially it's saying after you screwed up, you caught up to the mistake quickly. That's kind of saying, you know, after you left the door open and the dog got out, you very door.
Well,
I mean, the dog's still out, right?
How can they be a control commission if they're not controlling? I mean, it's just so weird to me that they didn't investigate Full Tilt in a more timely fashion to find out where that money was or what was going on.
Well, I think that's what they're saying is they did investigate as soon as they heard about it. But as a
that's what I mean. But how are they not doing it up to that point?
Ahead of it, yeah. You should know what's going to happen before it happens to the degree that you can. Now, I mean, we could go on for another seven shows here talking about, you know, whether Full Tilt was. You know, forthright in their information on their financial situation or not, but there certainly seemed to be, from those of us on the outside and by this report, more that could have been done.
Yeah,
to prevent it.
Yeah. All right, Utah Governor Gary, and it could be Herbert or it could be a bear. I'm not really sure, but I'm going to go with Herbert.
Yeah, just like the quarterback.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Herbert here. Has signed the law opting his state out of any future federal online poker regulation. It also makes it illegal to play online poker within the state's borders. Shocking.
Boo, yes.
Are we surprised by this at all?
If we can't get a law passed in Utah, what's going to happen to us? And all the more conservative states out there.
Oh, man.
No, absolutely no shock here. Little known fact, Utah and Hawaii are the only two states in the country with no legal gaming of any sort whatsoever, including lotteries and things like that, or Indian casinos.
You sound like Cliff Clavin there for a minute.
Well, of course, yes. No, I'm on vacation, so I'll go get a beer like Norm for the rest of the show. No, yeah, you're right. Absolutely no shock here. It's just unfortunate for folks that live in Utah. But, you know, I will say this, and I'm not picking on Utah at all by saying this. Obviously, where you choose to live, you know how things are there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you're an avid poker player, I'm going to guess that unless by, you know, job or family or something... you're not going to choose to settle in Utah because you know this stuff's going to happen there, right?
Right, right. And luckily for them, they're so close to other gaming that they can, you know, if they live on the border or somewhere, they can. It's probably a quick little jaunt to wherever they need to go. But within your state, it's brutal.
All right, and finally, Daniel Negreanu was banned for 1 day from the 2+2 forum for beginning a post with an advertisement for the iSeries Live tournament in Ireland.
Oh, jeez.
1 day.
Yeah, they got so much more important stuff to do in life, and that forum is so important to people. It's crazy. I actually followed a little bit on Twitter, too, and I don't like to quote Twitter too much because you always get into trouble or whatever. So, but he was pretty much explaining that he was sorry and, you know, he didn't realize whatever that it was that big of a deal, but they could just easily private message him and said, hey, we're going to take this down, but, you know, why do you ban the guy? I mean, that's just so ridiculous.
Well, but for 1 day.
And for 1 day, I mean, ooh.
You know, I don't want to pick on 2+2. I know it's an extremely important website in the poker community, and to be honest, I really should be reading it more often. I just can't make sense of it, to be honest. There's too much in there.
Yeah.
And I know they have people that do a good job of summarizing threads and things like that, but it's just a lot to take in.
It's overwhelming. And the other thing too is once it seems to me that every thread ultimately ends up with guys just screaming.
Yeah.
Or you know, just attitudes every single post. And I have enough attitude in my life with other things in life. I don't need to do that too. And so I stopped reading it. And it's a shame because there's so much power there.
So much stuff in there, yeah.
So many of our poker room managers just worry to death about what's being said on there about them. And it's a shame. And it's true because there's this core of people that they have such vitriol or whatever that they spew it and it gets read and it gets taken seriously. And that's hard for me to get past on those sites. And that's why I don't read them as much as I should, you know, or whatever. I think our forum is... may not be as juicy or as obviously visited or whatever, but it's a pretty decent conversation going on in our sites, and no
much
one
more
is
civil.
Much more civil, and I prefer it that way. So you're sacrificing content and mass amount of people, but at the same time you're having a nice little. It's a real community. It's a real forum where people can exchange ideas without fear of. You know, being belittled and whatever. So I'm not saying that that's all that happens on 2+2 because that's not what I'm trying to get across.
Right,
it's just that
right.
Whenever I read one, it's usually because it's a controversial topic and then people go crazy. And it's tough for me to get past when I read that stuff. But it is very important. It is a very important forum to have. And I appreciate all that they do and everything. And I'm not saying anything negative about the forum itself. It's just tough for some of the posters just get on my nerves and I can't read it.
Yeah, just a quick story before we move on too. I had somebody that... said, hey, you need to check out 2+2 on this topic. And I'm like, all right. I got there, and it was 530 pages.
Yeah.
Not 530 posts,
right,
which
pages.
Already would be quite a lot. Pages.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow.
Where do you begin?
You know, I started beginning, and then I'm like, wait a minute. I'm going to be here for the rest of my human life.
Yeah.
And not even get to the end of this discussion. So, yeah, but crazy.
Yeah, I just don't know where to begin with it. If somebody recommends for us to read something, they should say what page number or something to start with. Because, you know, you get in there and it's 30 posts per page or whatever it is, and that's like 1,500 posts or whatever. That's just crazy.
But mad props to them for building an amazing forum out
there. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. They do so much more than just that forum on there, too.
That's true, yeah.
Okay, we have a brand new O'Malley's Move. Let's get to it.
Hello, and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. This week, we're sitting at a $2 a point Chinese poker home game against three very formidable opponents. We've been playing for roughly 17 hours and are up $3. Not a bad night, considering. We're dealt the Ace of Clubs, King of Diamonds, Queen of Hearts, Queen of Diamonds, Queen of Clubs, Ten of Spades, Nine of Spades, Nine of Hearts, Eight of Clubs, Seven of Spades, Six of Clubs, Four of Hearts, and the Four of Clubs. As we begin to go over the possible hands we could set, we notice the player to our left has already set his hand and is drumming his fingers impatiently. How are we going to set ours?
You know, last week I visited my parents, as I always do, And we played cards at the end of the night, as we always do. And one of the things I like most about playing cards with my parents, aside from getting to spend that precious time with them, is that they enjoy playing different games, not just C-N-L-H-E. And one of the games that we often play is Crazy Pineapple, because it sort of satisfies my father and me and my mom, because my dad really likes to hold 'em. And so this is still sort of hold 'em. It drives him a little crazy, obviously, because he hates it that he has a made hand in his hand, but, you know, the card flopped higher than that with the other one. He's like, I want to keep them all. So it kind of satisfies us playing a different game, but also giving him his no limit hold 'em itch kind of thing satisfied. But one of the things about Crazy Pineapple is my mom always wants to call it, but she can never remember the name of it. And she always calls out, hey, let's play Cabbage Patch. I'm like, Mom, we've been playing poker.
Isn't that a kid's
game? We've been playing poker for years. Is it really that hard to remember Crazy Pineapple? I mean, I can only assume it's because it has the same initials, it involves the food group somehow. But it got me to thinking about just how silly the name is, and even kind of how silly the game is.
Sure.
And I started to wonder, what games do we really consider legit, and why do we? You know, when we first started our Annie Up home game, well, your home game was going before I joined it, but once I joined and we got the show going and we started to take it a little more seriously and started playing more of the traditional games, but we had this sort of snobbish kind of edict that Faso and everybody like to throw around. You know, if you can't win a bracelet in the game, we can't call it in our home game. You know, it has to be, you know, if the World Series of Poker deals this game for a bracelet in that discipline, then you can't call it if you don't, you know, set in that mindset. So really, what makes a poker game legitimate, and what makes the other ones carnival games? So I started to give this some thought, and I want you to weigh in on them, but I wrote a few little summaries of each. Now, the first thing that comes to mind for me when you think of carnival games is having a wild card, whether it's a joker or some preordained one-eyed jack or deuce or something. You know, when avid card players think of carnival games, that's what they think of. And if you're a serious poker player, or if you're serious about poker, you know, people are always saying, you don't need wild cards. You need to rely just on your skill. But, you know, five-card draw with a joker was literally the backbone of the poker mecca that is California for a long time. You know, I mean, try walking up to Mike Carroll someday and say, hey, you know what, five-card draw with a joker? That's a carnival game designed to aid the inferior player. You're a joke. He might just hit you up the side of the head with a copy of Super System.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it?
Wouldn't that be cool?
Can you imagine trying to get the your insurance company to pay for that?
But really, though, so why is it then taboo to introduce a joker or any other wild game to any a wild card to any other game? It still involves skill. You got to know the outs a joker or a wild card provides. And if anything, you know, a lot of people argue that draw games are the purest form of poker because, you know, there are no exposed cards. And yet adding a very powerful card like a joker to that, now it taints it? So really, Scott, at that point, let's just deal with this. Do you think that wild cards, you know, are a joke and they shouldn't be in the game?
Well, first of all, I love that we're doing this topic this week because, you know, we're bearing down here on April Fool's Day. And so I guess it's a case to be made that these games are maybe foolish.
Foolish?
But yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, I guess I go back to when we first started our home game, and that was our thing. Because, you know, when I started playing the last home game I had when I was just a pup,
right
out of college, you know, that's what we played. We played all the follow the queen, the baseball, the night baseball, all these other things. And it was fun. I mean, we were playing for nickels and dimes and just having a good time, right?
Right.
Well, when we started our present home game, which obviously has gone through a lot of permutations, I know Fass and I were pretty insistent that we were going to want to play real games, as you mentioned. And so, you know, I think our loose translation at that point was games that you could play in a casino. I don't think we necessarily had a bracelet or anything like that, but a game that you've seen in a casino,
right.
Which was great because it let me introduce double playing Double Flop at the time. And Derby Language is just as crazy as anything. We're going to talk about that later. But, you know, here's the thing. A Joker is... every deck of cards I've ever owned has come with a Joker.
Yep.
So if it's in the deck, I don't think there's anything wrong with using it. And your skill as a player needs to take into account what that extra card means. And if anything, I would think very skilled players would like to have that in their game. Or I shouldn't say wouldn't like, but we would not be opposed to it if they're playing against less skilled players, because it adds another element of strategy and makes it more, it makes your edge even higher.
And also, too, to make the non-skilled player think it's gold and hang on to it forever, thinking that, you know, they can't lose with it or something, when you know that no matter what they have with that Joker, you still can beat them with your hand or whatever. So, I mean, there are a lot of opportunities,
yeah.
You know. And we both realize, we're not stupid, we both realize that the Jokers are also put in the decks to replace cards that get lost or damaged if you can. And then from now on, everybody knows the Joker is the King of Hearts or whatever. So it's also for that. But really, you're right. I mean, the Jokers come with it. They're part of the deck. And like I said, a game that was considered absolutely not only legitimate, but one of the most important games to the poker evolution in California and elsewhere was a five-card draw with a Joker in it. And the whole half the chapter of his five-card draw in the Super System is on dealing with the Joker, a 53-card deck. And, I mean, it's in his book, so it's legitimate. So why just that game, too, you know? And it brings me up to my next point. I would love to see a Joker in triple draw. Could you imagine, you know, knowing that that Joker could be any one of the wheel cards that you want it to be? It opens up a huge, you know, a huge array of hands you can make now. And, you know, when I think of poker, I think of making hands. I think of trying to make a hand. Your goal is to make a royal flush. If you can't make that, you're still trying to make a hand as strong as possible. Yet there are games that want you to make the worst hand possible. How is this in the true spirit of poker? And we all know the reason. It's because sharks wanted to get the fish's money any way they could, and when fish complained that they weren't making any hands, they said, okay, how about we go worst hand wins? And then we even talked a little bit about this with Huck Seed. You know, so, and the same with triple draw games, really. You know, oh, I can't make a hand. You know, okay, well, how about if we draw three times so you can try to make your hand? We'll give you two more tries at it. You know, why aren't those carnival games? To me, getting three chances to make one hand or to try to make the worst hand, that's a carnival game to me, but it's bracelet games. You can find them in... Well, you don't really find lowball games very often in casinos unless you're playing them for 2040 or higher.
And, right.
But really, though, there's bracelets for them. There's, I think I mentioned this later on, but the MGM Grand Challenge, which is next month, is going to have a Chinese poker game. So, I mean, really, if these games, how are these games not? The pros really cherish the deuce to seven no limit single draw bracelet. Well, why? It sounds like a carnival game to me. You know, I mean, I guess it's single draw and whatever, so that makes sense, but it's still a low hand. You're still trying to make a seven. So again, I feel like I don't know if we're ever going to get to the bottom of what a legitimate poker game is. I think in the end we're going to say all games are legitimate. And it's just whatever you can... And I think, like you said, I agree with you. I think when we started our home game and we started to incorporate these other games, we wanted to make sure that there were games that, like you said, were in a casino, that if we went to a casino and we couldn't play No Limit because we wanted to, or we couldn't find a 4-8 limit game that we liked, that we'd be able to play a different game because we want to play poker and we want to be proficient at it. So we did that, and that's probably why a lot of people don't call Follow the Queen.
Yeah.
But that doesn't make it any less legitimate, I think. I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess we're talking about two different things here. Legitimacy is bestowed from the poker community as a whole. So in terms of legitimacy, you're right. If it's offered at a casino, if it's a bracelet event, there's some built-in legitimacy there. And then I guess our overall question, though, is why?
Yeah.
You know, as far as I know, there's never been a bracelet to Follow the Queen.
But there was one in Chinese poker.
Yes.
And that is almost, I mean, yes, there's a lot of strategy to when to surrender. There's a lot of strategy to what to put up top. There's some strategy in there. But really, if I got hit in the face with the deck and had a full house in the middle every time, you're not beating me.
No.
And I'm not doing anything that anybody who knows what beats what can play that game. And so, and you're right, I haven't gone back. There are a lot of bracelets that were given out that you look at them now and you're like, there will never be a bracelet in that event ever again. But they were given out in the 70s and 80s. So that's the other thing, which I will ultimately talk about too, is who decides? You know, who decides that the bracelet, you know, this is a good enough game for a bracelet? We got the 8-game mix, 12-game mix, and we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit here, but or 13-game mix, whatever it is that they're doing.
27-game
mix. Exactly. But really, why is it that those deserve a bracelet and something like, even like No Peak, you know, which yeah. if you took the wild cards out of it, if you played 7-card stud, 7 cards down, there's got to be some skill in that a little bit. You know, you don't know your cards, but you know that the odds of you beating what he has shown for the first 4 cards is better. You know, so I mean, there are some skill sets that you could use in those games. You know, I remember there were some games that every once in a while, especially like Frank's a good one for this. He'll introduce a game. He'll say, hey, I heard this on another show, or I read this in a book, or one of my friends says he plays this. Let's try it. And we'll try it. Most of the time they fade, and the main ones stay, because those are the ones we play in the casinos and stuff. But really, who decides that this is legitimate? You know, the poker community as a whole, you said, does, but they always follow the lead of the WPT and World Series.
Well, so, yeah, but I don't think the the World Series introduces a game that's not... They're not being... That they're not being asked to introduce. Yeah, a couple years ago, I mean, they took away a lot of these games that we're talking about, and, you know, when No Limit Hold'em took off, and then there was a minor backlash over it, like, you know, hey, some of us still like to play these other games, and that's when they brought them back. So I don't necessarily think there's somebody at the World Series Poker headquarters sitting around inventing games and putting them in the bracelet mix the next year. I think it's based on people asking them. So it is an organic thing, I think, of poker players coming together.
But there's no legitimate process, right? It's a matter of bending the right ear of the right person. Right.
Absolutely.
Right, and getting your cohorts to help you.
I think it's, yeah. You know, it's Occupy Wall Street, but in poker world, you know?
Yeah.
You get enough people together that say, hey, this is a legitimate, quote-unquote, legitimate poker game, then it becomes a, quote-unquote, legitimate poker game. But and if somebody, you know, even if it's somebody well-respected poker community says, hey, we need a deal, follow the queen at the World Series, I don't think it's going to happen because there still has to be support for it. You know, certainly these days. I mean, can you imagine the number of pages on the 2+2 thread for a follow the queen bracelet?
But you know what? That gets to my next point then. Stud games, okay? People love to say that stud is the hardest game there is because you have to keep track of the up cards. And so, okay, granted, there's a lot of reasoning with that. It's a lot of skill. So seven card stud is the accepted legitimate poker game, but they're exposed cards. You know, it's like, okay, those cards are exposed. So why isn't follow the queen a game that... You know, let's just say, what if you just made the queen wild or whatever? Would that be considered legitimate? If anything, can you imagine the skill set for that game?
Yeah.
If you're really playing it seriously and not just trying to make a royal flush, you know, or seven of a kind, if you've really, really followed the wild, you have to follow the wild card that comes after the queen, figuring out the possible hands that are out there, only to see the queen fall, like, on the last card, so now no cards are wild except for the queen. So now this guy has been betting it all along, thinking he's got three of a kind, and then, boom, he doesn't. I mean, I'm not legitimately advocating that we all of a sudden start playing this game, but it's just funny to me that people dismiss these games when that would be so much harder to play, in my mind, than easier. I don't know. I mean, unless you have the queens themselves, that's a game where you're like, at any moment, you need to know when to bail.
Yeah.
And it seems like it would take more skill for me than to play that than any other stud variation. You know, and then you brought up in your last trip, they're dealing Mexican poker now.
Yep.
Which I guess has been dealt elsewhere too, but you first experienced it down at Seminole Coconut Creek.
Yeah.
How is removing cards from a deck not a carnival game? You know what I mean? It's it's being dealt everywhere. You know, no one calls Chicago. You don't play Chicago in a casino where half the pot goes to the player with the highest spade in the hole. You know, they play that in rounders. If that doesn't make it legitimate, nothing does, right? I mean, that's how I feel about it. I mean, Chicago, that's a carnival game. You just randomly awarding some guy half the pot. You can't bluff with it. If you're betting it the whole, I mean, I guess you could bet it the whole way, and they're going to think you have the spade, and if you don't, you don't get half the pot. So it's tough to bluff that way. I mean, I guess you can get everybody to fold, but if they don't believe you're bored, they're going to call you. You know what I mean? To me, split pot games gets into another sort of carnival-like thing. You know, it's one of the most important aspects of horse. Omaha's a split pot game in there. Stud 8 is a split pot game in there. And all cash games across the country, those are some of the biggest cash games there are, split pot games. But why should we reward somebody with half the pot for having a terrible hand? That sounds like a carnival game to me. Right?
I can't disagree, no.
All right, cool.
I guess here's the peeling back the layers of the onion here. It's how we describe these games, because you know, everybody has a different definition of what carnival means.
Right.
But there, I mean, to one person, it's a carnival game. The other person, it's a variation. And I think that's really the heart of what's going on here, is that, you know, as humans, we're innovators. You know, that's why I'm sitting here talking to you from Washington, D.C. when you're in Pinellas Park, Florida right now, because somebody out there invented Skype.
Right.
You know? So it's the same thing in poker. I mean, if we just get one poker game and we say this is the only game we need to play for the rest of our lives, eventually it gets boring, right?
Mm.
So people are looking for new ways of doing things, and you know, just like you know, as seen on TV, some inventions take off and some end up in the discount aisle at Walmart. So I think it's the same thing with poker. Is the games that people really enjoy playing are the ones that end up in our casino environment and where we play it officially. And the ones that are truly carnival, in my opinion, I think, are the ones that are relegated to the super fun micro cash game home game thing.
And,
so
and I get all that, and I agree with it, but it's just funny to me. Like you mentioned a variation. Well, Follow the Queen's a variation. Chicago is a variation, but you know, we won't ever call them in our home game. You know, and it's maybe because you can't experience that elsewhere when it counts. I don't know, but it's just funny to me that people have this attitude toward these games like they're a joke. And how are they any different than splitting the pot because somebody has a crappy hand, they happen to have ace deuce in their hand,
right, yep.
You know, for Omaha or whatever. So, but of course, that gets us to our games. Hold'em in Omaha, standard, legitimate, most popular games now in the world. And we even call double flop Hold'em in our home game. Because you used to be able to play it at Derby Lane. And there are some groans when we call it, because really, I don't think there are any double flop bracelets out there.
Nope.
But will you play it? And the same with Juarez. For those who don't know, Juarez is a five-card Omaha game. You have two boards, but one overall river, and the overall high and the overall low split the pot. Why are these games accepted? You know, never heard of a bracelet in Juarez, buddy. You know, and we play double flop in our game. We can't play that anywhere else. And it does get a lot of groans. So, yeah, Hold'em. I would love to see Hold'em with a wild card. I mean, to me, that would be fantastic. And you don't have to declare what that card is until the end. You know what I mean? Like, you can change your mind, you know, based on what someone else is. You know what I mean? I mean,
oh, sure.
Same with Omaha.
Yeah.
You know, Omaha, you could use it for the high and the low. You know, you can make it the... I mean, there's all kinds of shit you could do with it. But, you know, I don't know. I just feel like... When I play with my parents, I have a lot of fun with them. And, you know, we pretty much play the legitimate games, too. We don't ever play the Follow the Queens or anything. They used to when they were younger. They, you know, with their friends and stuff, they Penny Ante stuff, they would play those fun games just to make it interesting and make people want to stick around because they can make hands and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But
well,
I don't know.
I think that's the ultimate point of this conversation, is that these things are created for two reasons. One, to create more action.
Right.
I mean, let's be honest. Anybody that plays poker and enjoys it, part of the reason, if not a big part of the reason, is the action.
Yep.
You know, it's something fun to do, right? And so, you know, if you can make the game even more action-packed, by theory, you're making it more fun, and then you enjoy it more and more people enjoy it. You know, the pots get bigger, and so, you know, that's really, I think, where these variations come from. And then the second part, of course, is the skill involved, too. I mean, a well-rounded, solid poker player can take any rule variation you throw at them and figure out how to exploit it or how the best way to play is. And if they know they're playing against people that aren't skilled in doing that, then they know they have an advantage. So the fact that these innovations come about, I think it appeals to people on both sides of the poker community.
So what you're saying then is you don't want our home game to be fun or skill set based.
No, what I'm saying is that you know, things evolve over time, and so you need to have you know, allowing variations to come in helps keep it fresh and exciting. And if you're a skilled player, then you shouldn't not want to have variations introduced because you should be able to figure out how to play at a maximum level. So going back to our home game, again, it's just our home game. Everybody does their home game differently. I think we have evolved to the point now where I'm not suggesting that we introduce follow the queen to the game, but I think it's evolved to the point that it would be legitimate for us to introduce that to the game if somebody wanted to.
Yeah, okay, that's good.
Because when we started the home game again, our goal was to prepare ourselves. I mean, obviously have fun and joke around and get to know each other, but from the poker point of view was for us to learn games that we could go play in a casino, which is what, you know, we talked about at the beginning of this topic, right?
Yep.
To this point, I think we all know how to play all those games now. So now it's just a matter of applying our poker skills differently. So again, I'm not going to call Follow the Queen in our home game, but I think we're to the point now that if somebody did, I'm not going to criticize them. The game is different now.
So basically what we're saying then is it's all games are, quote, legitimate. It's just what you want your home game to be. Will dictate the variations that you're willing to
spread.
Yeah, I
think that's a good way of saying it. I mean, this conversation has two sides. It has a home game component and it has a casino environment component to it. So, you know, in your home game, you know, no one should be telling anybody in their home game how to run their home game. You do your home game however you want. Obviously, we offer quite a bit of advice on the show on how to structure because we've done one for a while. But in the end, you know, if you like playing a 7-card stud and a dealer has 2 less cards, hey, it's your home game. You know, have fun with it.
And quick story before we end this. You know, one of the things that we brought up was the fact that if you're a good player or if you're better than the players in your home game or enough of the players in your home game and those inferior players want to call these types of games, don't be so quick to snap and say, oh, we only play, you know, because you are a better player. And the story I have is a few years ago, we had some relatives visiting from Virginia, and they came down, and it was right when we were starting the magazine, I think. And we were, at that point, we were really serious about our home game. We played a lot more back then than we do now. And my brother-in-law was like, hey, poker, huh? I played some poker in the Navy. And I'm like, okay, Nixon, you know, what do you want to do? And he's like, well, what do you like to play? And I said, well, I mean, I like to play all the games that we played. And at the time, you know, we played everything. But I said, my favorite game is, you know, Stud 8 and Hold'em. And he's like, oh, Stud 8, what's that? And I'm like, and I told him. And then he's like, oh, well, what's Hold'em? And I'm like, I told him. He's like, oh, we didn't play those games. I'm like, well, what'd you play? Oh, we played Roll Your Own. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, how do you play that? I never heard of it. So he tells me. I'm like, okay, I'll play with you. So I destroyed him.
Right.
Because I was a better poker player than he was.
Right.
You know, I mean, he just basically took every game to the end or something because he couldn't let go the way he played in the Navy, kind of like the way my father plays sometimes. And he just didn't understand the proper strategy. It took me a couple of minutes to figure out the right strategy for the game, and then I played it. And then we played another one that he liked to play. I don't remember what it was, but again, I destroyed him. And it wasn't for money. We were playing for chips or something because he's my brother-in-law. But so just remember that if somebody wants to play a game that you might think is beneath you or not going to help you, it actually will help you because you're still going to learn the better strategy for that game than they would, and you're going to be able to expose them for their weaknesses, and you're still going to be able to use your math or your read ability or whatever. So I just don't be so quick to dismiss it if that's something that you've done in the past, because I certainly won't now from now on.
Sure, absolutely.
This is Daniel Negreanu of FullContactPoker.com. You're listening to Ante Up.
All right, we got two situations for you this week, Chris.
Wow, it's like a double shot Thursday.
And they come from Canada, so it's more like four situations.
It's like three and a half, isn't it?
Well, yeah, because they get to play a lot more poker up there because they, you know, they got the interwebs.
Oh, I was thinking of the conversion rate.
Okay. Yeah, that could be too. I was just thinking, you know, they have a government that you know, a little more progressive.
So I don't need to like keep track of this hand, right? I can just listen to the situation.
Right?
All right,
so
very
I'm
good.
Gonna
I love these.
Fire them out, and then we'll talk about it. So, and we'll break them in into two. So we'll do the first one first.
I'm gonna pay my congressman. I'm gonna have him a lobbyist to change the hand of the week to situation of the week.
Okay.
Wonder how much money I gotta send his way to have that happen. I love these situations of the week. They're so much easier on us.
All right. So this comes from our good friend Chris up in I believe British Columbia. Up in Canada, contributes often, and he said that he made it back to a casino for the weekend for another $1, $2 CNLH.
E.
Love how we've brainwashed people into calling a crappy gnome and hold them now.
Yeah.
So here's the first situation that he proposes to us. It happened a few hours into a session, and he had been having a good session, not been involved in many hands, but had the best of hands when he's in. His 200 starting stack was up to about 400. Notice he didn't grow it to 400.
He didn't build it up. He just happens to be at 400 now.
Yep. This hand involves the fellow to his direct left, a regular who's known by all the regulars at the table, and had only been there about a half an hour, and our hero did not have much information on him other than he was reasonably active and definitely not a rock.
Okay, I filed that away.
All right. Our hero was dealt king-king in middle position, raises to $10, had it folded around to him, so he was first hand of the pot, raises to $10. This fellow at the left, who's reasonably active but definitely not a rock, re-raises to $35, and our hero says that's the first re-raise he had made that night. Of course, he's only been there half an hour. Our hero thought for a bit, re-raised to $100. After a bit of thought, our villain calls. So I'm going to pause here because he has his first question. Does this rule out ace-ace in this position for our opponent?
Well, if I was looking at our hero stack as the villain, and he has about 400, and he re-raised to 100, that's 25% of his stack. If I had aces, I would think we would be getting it all in if I popped it again. The thing about, you know, a couple guys in our home game, we've had this discussion in the past. They always say they like to just call there with aces and then, you know, hope for a flop that's all unders, you know, that doesn't scare the kings, have the kings bet out, and then get a stack. But I don't know. I feel like if I had aces in that spot and I was the villain, just calling is giving him a chance to, you know, outflop us. Or, you know, I mean, if he's going to see all the cards. What flop is going to keep kings from betting or getting it all in anyway, other than an ace? So I don't want him to get away from that if I happen to flop a set. So I don't know. Calling doesn't feel like aces. A lot of people are tricky that way and will do that and hope to God that an ace doesn't flop or a king, and then they'll get it all in. But I feel like if I got like 300, 400 in front of me and I've already put 100 in. So when you say he made it 100 to go, or he made another 100 on top of that?
Re-raised to 100.
To 100.
So.
Yeah, and it's 25% of his stack. I feel like he might get his whole stack if we had aces. So I'm not necessarily sold on this guy having aces. But
well, to me, I'm taking a very linear approach to the question. The question is, does this rule out ace-ace in this position? And I don't think it does.
Yeah, I don't think it rules it out, but I'm not convinced of it. That
yeah,
he has.
I think standard play, the guy would probably re-raise you again with aces. But the world's different now.
Yeah.
You know, this. You know, we don't know anything more about this guy than what we know. But, I mean, there's a lot of 3-betting, 4-betting, 5-betting going on now with junk out there now. So the fact that he just called here, I mean, you know, good poker player plays against type. So am I thinking ace-ace is less likely? I think that's a legitimate question to ask, and I probably am, but I'm certainly not ruling out Ace Ace now.
Yeah, yeah, I can't rule it out, but it just feels like to me that if you've committed that much of your stack, he knows you can't. You probably can't fold. You could, but by three betting, you know, I mean, unless you have absolute junk. And that's the other thing too, is we don't know our hero's impression on the table. We don't know what this guy thinks of us either. So.
Yep.
That would help a little bit in deciding why he just called. But I it doesn't rule out ace-ace. It just it seems more unlikely than not.
All right, well, there's more to our first situation here. So the flop comes so pretty, he says. So pretty, Chris. King 6-6.
Nice.
And he wants to know, what percentage of the time would one lead out in the spot versus check?
You kind of broke up there a minute. You said okay. Versus what?
What percentage of the time would one lead out in this spot versus checking? We're first to act here, okay. And obviously we flopped top boat.
Well, I feel like I would lead out 90% of this time. Okay, so let's say the guy has aces. Now he's got an over pair to the board. You could very well have had ace-king, and he's licking his chops right now. Plus, you took control of the hand, you raised, and then re-raised. You're expected to have a hand there and bet. If you check, and he's going to think you have queens, he's not going to bet if he has aces, because he's going to want you to... You know what I mean? He's going to think that king is going to kill his action, too.
Right.
So, you might want to bet. You've showed strength twice pre-flop. There's no way you're not putting a bet out there. I guess you're hoping that he has queens by checking, and that what hand could you have that you're afraid of that you would check to? And to me, I would fire. Maybe I would even increase that now. I would fire like 95% of the time, I think, because of the way the betting went. You check now; it's so fishy.
Yeah.
And again, if he doesn't have, the only way he's going to call you is if he has aces anyway, or pocket sixes. But the only way he's calling really is if he has aces or maybe ace king. And
yeah, aces, ace king, or pocket six.
Yeah, those are the only three hands that could call
six
you.
Or some sort, but yeah.
Yeah. Six, and if he catches, you know, there's no way for him to catch up really unless he has aces and an ace comes on the turn. And at that point, you've lost. So you got to get some money in here. So I would bet 95% of the time.
Yeah, I'm going to say 95% of the time, and the 5% I don't is because I'm the cocktail waitress is bothering me about my beer.
Or that you're convinced that he'll make a bet, and then you can get it all in.
Yeah, but, that's true. I mean, at that point, you need to have a good read on your player, and there's no way in this situation
that he does.
With a guy that's been sitting there for half an hour that you don't know anything about that I think you can make that kind of
exactly
assumption. So at this point, I'm betting out. You know, if he's got a hand that you can call with, you're going to get the money. If he's got a hand that you can't call with, he's going to fold anyhow. It doesn't matter. I guess it should matter a little bit. He's got, like, pocket tens. Or give him another street and he catches a ten, then maybe he'll catch more. But even then, most players, you're not going to get that because he's going to think that you're right. It's just too fishy not to, right?
No, yeah, and you're giving up a street of betting to hope he hits a two-outer. And you don't even know if the two-outer is going to be the aces or the queens.
That's correct.
You know, or whatever. And he may still be convinced you have the kings anyway, so just checking. I don't know if he's even going to buy into it. So I would bet.
All right, so our hero did lead out for a half pot. It's $100. Our villain says, quote, I would play ace-king like that too and folded, showing me his pocket jacks.
Yeah.
He says, obviously, I lost money on how that hand was played. I don't know about that.
Yeah, I don't think so either. First of all, he's got hit a two-outer twice. You're looking at, 4%, 5% on the first, and then 2% on the, or whatever, 5%, 10%, and then 5%. I mean, you didn't lose money. You're not going to get any money out of this guy. And yeah, when the king came, I was afraid that he had queens and that he would think we had ace-king. But the funny thing is, though, is if I knew a guy had ace-king, if I knew he had ace-king, I might have re-raised again pre-flop,
right.
But I don't know if I would have. Jax is kind of a tricky hand. But yeah, and I guess by him not shoving, it proved to us they didn't have aces, probably. And that's why he did just call with jacks.
Well, I'm also interested with this jacks. I mean, how often would you call that re-raise to $100?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
You know, jacks are one of those hands, again, for us pedestrian players, which I still consider myself, they're very difficult to play. So, this guy raised, sure, I'm going to re-raise and see where I'm at. And then the guy re-raises to $100. you know, again, I know obviously the world's become a little looser now, so you know, I want to be this type that just gets throws away premium pocket pairs when I get three bet. But certainly, it's saying that that hand's really strong. So at that point, how do you play it after the flop? You know, what if this flop came with three unders?
Yeah.
Would you still feel confident with your jack? I mean, at that point, I think when you've got $100 in this pot, when you re-raise somebody and then he re-raised you, I think you've reduced yourself to a two-outer at that point.
Yep. Yep.
To be confident, right?
Yep. And again, on this board,
or a straight draw of some sort, maybe. But then you're putting in a lot of money. The hope you hit the straight draw. So
it is interesting. If that guy was sold on our hero having ace king, and the king didn't come, what would have happened? But
yes, very,
you know,
true.
That would have been very interesting. Yeah, and you're right about the whole, the world is changing with the 3 and 4 and 5 betting with nothing. You know, I see a lot more of that in tournaments than cash games, because
true.
People don't want to get knocked out and whatever. But you know, because you almost always have to show a hand on cash. But you know, the call clearly to me, it meant that the guy didn't have aces. But it didn't rule it out. So there's another situation now?
All right, he's got one more situation. It's okay. A daily double today.
Excellent.
All right, so this happened at the end of the night, and our hero says he should have already stopped playing.
No, you hate to hear that.
These situations are always pure gold when someone starts it off that way.
You hate to hear that.
I was tired and not thinking properly anymore. In early position, I was dealt ace of diamonds, nine of diamonds. I very loosely raised to $10, hoping to... Well, I'm not sure what I was hoping. All diamonds? Mistake number one. Four people call my $10 raise, and we go to the flop five-handed. Flop comes ace-8-3 rainbow with just one diamond. The big blind checked. I bet out just over half pot, $30. It folds all the way to the big blind, who calls. The big blind is another regular, aggressive, very active, smart. In my mind, I have him on an ace anything. I think he would have repopped the big blind pre-flop with any pair. Turn comes a five. Suit not important because it's not a diamond. Big blind checks. I bet about half pot, $60. Again, big blind calls. River comes seven something. No flush possible. Big blind bets out $35. I cry, call the $35 expecting to be beat. And the big blind saying, I don't have much, and turns over ace queen offsuit.
Oh, wow.
So, which begs the question, our hero says, should I have interpreted the $35 river bet as a blocking bet and raise to represent a set?
Well, if you're going to represent a set, let's go back to the beginning and see if it works. I didn't listen to it that way. I was listening for the situation. First, I would never have bet the turn. I would have kept that pot smaller.
Yeah, absolutely.
The call scares that bejesus out of me, since it was ace-8. Three or something, right?
Right, ace-8-3.
There's no draw there, unless he's got a wheel draw, and he wouldn't have called a $10 raise out of position with deuce-4 or something. So, likely. If we had a set, if you had a set, you might have played it this way. You might have raised pre-flop with a pair of eights. You might have bet that flop. But again, you might not have bet that flop because there's really nothing that can scare you other than pocket aces there. You might have checked behind to try to get him to bluff on the turn. So there's a chance that you might not have played it that way, but there's a chance you might have bet a set there because you were showing strength pre-flop and that's your job. But you know what? It gets you into trouble playing ace rag and playing it for a raise. You know, ace nine is a horrible hand. It really is. I would rather have ace five than ace nine. The other thing I was afraid of is that the guy did have an ace rag, and all the rags in the world came on that board.
Exactly.
Other than your rag, so he must have made two pair was what I was thinking.
Well, yeah. I mean, think about how many aces beat you here.
Yeah.
Ace 8, ace 3, ace 5, ace 7, ace king, ace queen, ace jack, ace 10.
Yep. It's just a bluff catcher, really, now.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's a lot of hands that beat you there, so... I think the way he played it, he could sell the set, but I don't think the other guy is going to be worried about a set at that point, right?
No, I do think that if he made it 100 to go or something, the guy would probably lay down ace-queen.
He would probably, yeah.
So I'm not saying it has to be a set. You could very well have ace-8. You played it like you had ace-8, you know, you bet out, and then you So two pair is just the same as a set here. So I think that, yeah, I think you could have got the guy off the hand in retrospect. It's weird that he bet out with ace queen and didn't.
Well, I mean,
didn't raise at any point along the way, you know.
Yeah, should I interpret it as a blocking bet? And I think, yeah, I think the answer to that is yes.
Absolutely.
I mean, we bet out 30 on the flop, we bet out 60 on the turn, and now this guy throws he comes alive on the river with a $35 bet. He's trying to set the price.
Yeah.
Now, the problem, so yeah, I mean, you can interpret it. Now, the problem is then determining how much you need to bet to get him to lay down his blocking bet hand.
Here's the deal. The call is the worst play because you can only beat a bluff, and who's bluffing with $35 in a right. $200 pot? So a call means, okay, either when you call, you're hoping that you're catching a bluff because there is no, like you said, there's almost no worse ace. You know what I mean? So what you're hoping for is to split the pot or to catch a bluff. And so you have to decide right there, is this $35 more important to my stack now, or is the $35 I'm going to win for him in the money that's out there really going to happen with a call here? So you either fold and cut your losses because you know you're beat, or you make a much bigger bet because you don't believe him, and it's the only way you're really going to win this hand. I think that, was it a blocking bet? I think absolutely it's a blocking bet, but I also think that a call is a terrible, terrible move. I'm not diminishing his play or anything.
Right.
But I mean, really, if you're thinking long and hard about that bet of $35, blocking means that he has a hand, that he has some sort of hand he wants to show down. But it's not strong enough to make the real bet that he should have made, which is $90 or so. So you need to make that bet if you're going to win this pot, because a call is not going to do it. You're only hoping to catch a bluff with a call, and you don't have a good enough hand to beat anything. So I would have folded or raised. I would not have called.
You are correct.
Well, I hope I'm correct. I'm sure we'll get blasted somehow for that. But
it's all part of the fun.
Yeah, it's the charm of the show.
Our hero said, I still ended the night up a decent 120, but he says those two hands are haunting him so much that I didn't sleep a wink that night.
Oh, man.
Of course, the monster caffeine drink and the coffee until midnight didn't help my sleeping at all either. And he said, for what it's worth, my notes and lessons from that evening include stop playing at midnight. Says he normally gets up at 4:50 a.m. for work. Wow. Yeah.
Jeez.
And no drinking coffee after 7 p.m. LOL. As always, great work, boys, and come to Canada someday. I would love to come to Canada someday.
Maybe.
And,
maybe.
But yeah, two great situations there.
Thanks for the double shot situation.
And Chris, we're going to send you a download of the Chinese 13-card poker app for Apple products from Smapsoft. You don't have to be a winner to enjoy this great app. You can download it yourself by visiting the iTunes store.
Make sure your operating system is as up-to-date as possible for these downloads. They're always refining their product, and so the download that we'll give you is probably for the most recent app. So make sure you're always checking your app store for updates and stuff. Make sure you have the most up-to-date software as possible. Okay, I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.